Torches in hand, they left the hall and fell to work at once, briskly prepared a good snug resting place, and then returned to Odysseus, urged the guest, "Up, friend, time for sleep. Your bed is made." How welcome the thought of sleep to that man now. So there, after many trials, Odysseus lay at rest, on a corded bed inside the echoing colonnade. Alcinous slept in chambers deep in his lofty house, where the queen his wife arranged and shared their bed. Book 8. A Day for Songs and Contests. When young Dawn with her rose-red fingers shone once more, royal Alcinous, hallowed island king, rose from bed, and great Odysseus, raider of cities, rose too. Poised in his majesty, Alcinous led the way to Phaeacia's meeting grounds, built for all beside the harboured ships. Both men sat down on the polished stone benches side by side, as Athena started roaming up and down the town in build and voice the wise Alcinous's herald, furthering plans for Odysseus's journey home, and stopped beside each citizen, urged them all, "Come this way, you lords and captains of Phaeacia, come to the meeting grounds and learn about the stranger, a new arrival, here at our wise king's palace now. He's here from roving the ocean, driven far off course. He looks like a deathless god." Rousing their zeal, their curiosity, each and every man, and soon enough the assembly seats were filled with people thronging, gazing in wonder at the seasoned man of war. Over Odysseus's head and shoulders now, Athena lavished a marvellous splendour, yes, making him taller, more massive to all eyes, so Phaeacians might regard the man with kindness, awe and respect as well, and he might win through the many trials they'd posed to test the hero's strength. Once they'd grouped, crowding the meeting grounds, Alcinous rose and addressed his island people. "Hear me, lords and captains of Phaeacia. Hear what the heart inside me has to say. This stranger here, our guest, I don't know who he is, or whether he comes from sunrise lands or the western lands of evening, but he has come in his wanderings to my palace. He pleads for passage. He begs we guarantee it. So now, as in years gone by, let us press on and grant him escort. No one, I tell you, no one, who comes to my house will languish long here, heartsick for convoy home. Come, my people, haul a black ship down to the bright sea, rigged for her maiden voyage, enlist a crew of 52 young sailors, the best in town, who've proved their strength before. Let all hands lash their oars to the thwarts, then disembark. Come to my house and fall in for a banquet, quickly. I'll lay on a princely feast for all. So then, these are the orders I issue to our crews. For the rest, you sceptred princes here, you come to my royal hall so we can give this stranger a hero's welcome in our palace. No one here refuse. Call in the inspired bard, Demodocus. God has given the man the gift of song, to him beyond all others the power to please, however the spirit stirs him on to sing." With those commands, Alcinous led the way, and a file of sceptred princes took his lead, while the herald went to find the gifted bard. And the 52 young sailors, duly chosen, briskly following orders, went down to the shore of the barren salt sea. And once they reached the ship at the surf's edge, first they hauled the craft into deeper water, stepped the mast amidships, canvas brailed, they made oars fast in the leather oarlock straps, moored her, riding high in the swell, then disembarked and made their way to wise Alcinous's high-roofed halls. There colonnades and courts and rooms were overflowing with crowds, a mounting host of people, young and old. The king slaughtered a dozen sheep to feed his guests, eight boars with shining tusks, and a pair of shambling oxen. These they skinned and dressed, and then laid out a feast to fill the heart with savour. In came the herald now, leading along the faithful bard the muse adored above all others, true, but her gifts were mixed with good and evil both. She stripped him of sight, but gave the man the power of stirring rapturous song. Pontonous brought the bard a silver-studded chair, right amid the feasters, leaning it up against a central column, hung his high, clear lyre on a peg above his head, and showed him how to reach up with his hands and lift it down. And the herald placed a table by his side, with a basket full of bread and cup of wine, for him to sip when his spirit craved refreshment. All reached out for the good things that lay at hand, and when they'd put aside desire for food and drink, the muse inspired the bard to sing the famous deeds of fighting heroes, the song whose fame had reached the skies those days, the strife between Odysseus and Achilles, Peleus's son. How once at the gods' flowing feast the captains clashed in a savage war of words, while Agamemnon, lord of armies, rejoiced at heart that Achaea's bravest men were battling so. For this was the victory sign that Apollo prophesied at his shrine in Pytho, when Agamemnon strode across the rocky threshold, asking the oracle for advice. The start of the tidal waves of ruin tumbling down on Troy's and Achaea's forces, both at once, thanks to the will of Zeus, who rules the world. That was the song the famous harper sang. But Odysseus, clutching his flaring sea-blue cape in both powerful hands, drew it over his head and buried his handsome face, ashamed his hosts might see him, shedding tears. Whenever the rapt bard would pause in the song, he'd lift the cape from his head, wipe off his tears, and hoisting his double-handled cup, pour it out to the gods. But soon as the bard would start again, impelled to sing by Phaeacia's lords who reveled in his tale, again Odysseus hid his face and wept.